You saw Big Mama in her cocktail dresses. You saw her in her cut-off boots. You saw her in her cowboy hat and man suit. You saw her as she drummed and hollered out the happy hour of her number two bumblebee. You saw Big Mama dancing her chant into the cut body of a running rooster. Scream shouting her talk in the flaming path of a solar eclipse.
I told Malcolm about it. Malcolm got on his cell phone and quickly made a couple phone calls. And next thing you know, he's on his way to Los Angeles. And upon, you know, arriving there and doing what he had to do, he also embarked for Mexico City because he had friends down there who were associated with an organization called RUMEC, which was an activist-based organization in San Jose, California, but they were also doing work with immigrants and Mexicans and concerned about discrimination in the construction industry. And they were familiar with Malcolm and invited him down there to provide support and to lend his name and his whatever prestige he may have had, the symbolism of his name, to that organization. And according to the news, the latest news accounts, which of course dismisses the notion that he was shot and killed in Tijuana, that in fact he was set upon by a gang and beaten to death in Mexico City. So much so that when they were rushing him to the hospital, he died on his way to the hospital. According to a young man who had been traveling with him and founder of that RUMEC organization there. So that's where we are at this point. I put calls into the State Department, the Consul General down in Mexico City, trying to get some kind of understanding of how this investigation is ongoing. Apparently it is, but you know, you got a lot of conspiracy theories out there now. People suggesting that perhaps, you know, here's another opportunity for, you know, the law enforcement agencies, particularly COINTELPRO, is alive and well, and they went after him. And it was a convenient opportunity and location in which to wipe him out in order to associate and insinuate that he was connected with the drug cartel.
Right.
So we got all those kind of things circulating. But if you go, you know, one of the things I would recommend for your listeners is that they go to a couple of websites, including Malcolm Shabazz's website.
He was a Facebook friend.
Oh yeah. And if you go there, there's even a brief story about his appearance up there in Toronto.
Now that's, you know, pardon me, but I don't want to cut you. But he came to Toronto, and we were in the middle of a big struggle up here. I missed his visit to Toronto. I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, he appeared there at Ryerson.
University, right?
Yeah, and they have a picture of him and a brief statement and a little short story on his appearance there in Toronto. So it just shows you again how he was moving around and speaking on various campuses. And we had opportunities to interview him when he came through Harlem, particularly our editor, Naya Arende. She did a good job there. And he appeared on Press TV. If you go
Press
online,
TV, is that Iran or?
That's Iranian, right?
Iranian TV, right?
Yeah, right. If you go and see, you can see on YouTube, there's a couple of speeches that you can find on YouTube, so your listeners can get an idea of what kind of a young man he was, particularly the appearance that he did with News1.com with Aaliyah King, where he's putting on Malcolm's hat, he's got the ring, he's got the rifle and everything, and doing his impersonation of his grandfather. Of course.
Well, I was reading, then again, reading this stuff, and I don't know how true it was, but he had accepted. He became a Shia. He became a Shia. I know his father, Malcolm X. There was a stamp. There is a stamp. The Iranians put a stamp out on Malcolm X's picture on a stamp. You can probably go to Google Images and check that out.
I'm not sure about the Shia Sunni thing.
That's why I framed it that way. I don't know how true that is, but
yeah,
that's being promoted.
Yeah. Well, we know he made the Hajj. Right. And he talked about it on his blog, you know, how it really was a transforming experience for him, as it was for his grandfather, and as it was for his auntie, Ilyasa, who also made the Hajj, or for his grandmother. She made the Hajj, too.
Dr. So Betty Shabazz, she made the Hajj, correct.
Sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have about 15 minutes left, and there's a number of other issues we needed to discuss. I wanted to talk about the fact that there was a lot of Malcolm X's mother was born in Grenada.
Yes.
Lewis Norton Langdon. She came from Grenada at a place called La Digue, and she moved to Halifax, Nova Scotia. Then she moved to Montreal, Canada, where she met Earl Little, Malcolm X's father, who was from Reynolds, Georgia. And the Littles had a lot of, Malcolm X.
Well, that was their association with the Garvey movement.
They met at a Garvey convention in Montreal. Exactly. Yeah. Definitely. Thank you for correcting me on that, because that's exactly what they were at. Met at a Marcus Garvey convention, 23 maybe.
I think it was 23. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
1925 there in Omaha, Nebraska.
That's where Malcolm was born.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Wilfred, the oldest brother, I think was born in Philadelphia.
Yes.
I believe he was born in, but yeah, the Littles moved around. But there was a lot of deaths in the Little family, and a lot of deaths in the Bishop family. Morris Bishop's son, Vladimir, was killed in Toronto in front of a place called the Music Hall. And Morris's father, Rupert was killed in Grenada before Morris.
When you go back and you take it back to, we don't know anything about the great grandfather for Malcolm Shabazz's great grandfather, great great grandfather, that is,
correct.
Earl Little's father.
I haven't heard anything about him, period.
Yeah, we don't know anything about that because Earl Little left Georgia after his three brothers were killed by Knight Riders, Ku Klux Klan members, who knows, but it was enough for him to get out of Georgia.
Right.
And eventually settling in Lansing, where he was killed by the Black Legion or the Ku Klux Klan. So you have this three generations now in which the family lost like a very prominent male member of the family has been extinguished. One of the things about that is that the mystery surrounding all three, because even with Earl Little, no one has ever tried and convicted for killing Mr. Little. You know, you arrested anyone. I don't even know if it was fully investigated.
Right.
Malcolm makes mention of that in his autobiography, that they grabbed him and threw him on these railroad tracks, or trolley tracks, and the train ran over him and cut his body in half. Cut his body in half. That's where he recounts that in his autobiography. And there began to feel that he, too, was destined for a death of violence because he had seen it in so many... so often in his family, his father and three uncles.
Right.
And I don't know, it's kind of a premonition. And now they're beginning to talk about him. Malcolm Shabazz also may have had some indication, because that blog he wrote about the FBI harassment is very revealing.
Right.
But at the same time suggesting that, you know, we don't put anything past, you know, how the state can move to eliminate you. But
no, we don't put anything past the state. But the one thing I wanted to put on the record, people need to know that Malcolm X's mother lived until 1989.
Mm-hmm.
When she got out of the mental hospital, she moved to, or she was living in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which is the birthplace of, Dr. Busek, Abby Lincoln, and I guess Derek Jeter. And she passed away in Kalamazoo, and she lived until 1989. I just wanted to, a lot of people don't know that.
Yes. And Malcolm had, you know, near the latter stages of her illness in his old connection, his siblings, again, you have it even with this continuation with the daughters and everything, whether there's a tight unit there and whether they really ground together or whether you have some dissension in the ranks or some disturbances among them or they're absolutely on the same page about everything. But you have to understand it. It's like the King family. When you've had, like, the patriarch, the leader, the head of that whole family line is just eliminated in such a brutal and violent fashion, and how that trauma can live with you and be, you can be haunted by that for many, many years. And I think Malcolm Shabazz, you know, was still trying to get over that at the same time to identify with the best of what his grandfather represented.
Right.
And that kind of that international movements may have been, or the Hajj to Mecca, all of that may have been an opportunity or at least an effort on his part to kind of connect with some of the very vital things that his grandfather represented.
And he only lived to be 28. Malcolm lived to be 39.
Exactly.
And I wanted you to give it to you. You are working on, you have access, or you had access to the diaries, and you're going to, what form, you're going to do a book, or you're going to publish? What are you going to do?
Well, see, Ilyasa and I just chose to do this, but basically we just stay in our way and let Malcolm speak for himself. And it'll be unlike the autobiography because he had so much editorial interference there with the autobiography, and he didn't get any kind of support I think he should have received there. I don't think that Alex Haley was actually the best person to work with him on that because of his inability to connect the dots, the nuances, the subtleties of where Malcolm was coming from. But with the diary, you don't have to worry about that because this is straight ahead. And the only time Ilyasa and I get involved in there is just for clarification, of course, the annotation, and providing commentary to contextualize, you know, particular days, moments, and individuals, episodes in his life. That's essentially it. We get out of the way, and you can hear in a very unadulterated way, uninterrupted way, you know, Malcolm's feelings and impressions. You can see his weaknesses and strengths. You can see the kind of intimidation, his inadequacies. You know, here's a man who's virtually flying by the seat of his pants, you know, and meeting world leaders, phenomenal world leaders, you know, men of only with an eighth grade education, but, you know, well educated in the ways of life and certainly in politics.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
1959, a lot of people don't really realize that there's not that much had been made of the fact that Malcolm had gone to Africa prior to, you know, the 60s. He went to Africa in 1959.
Yeah.
What did you find out about his first trip to Africa when he went to Egypt in 1959, where he met Anwar Sadat, but he saw Gamal Abdel Nasser? Is there anything in the diary about that?
No, we don't touch on that at all because he didn't keep a diary.
Oh, okay.
Of the 1959 experience.
I got you.
I looked for it, but I couldn't find anything. There were some notes that he kept, but not in a very strict and definite, a precise way as he did in 64.
Yeah, now,
the 1959 trip was kind of a reconnaissance trip in preparation for the visit. He deliberately held that, made that a very brief trip. And did not talk that much about it because it was an exploratory, a reconnaissance trip for Elijah Muhammad's going to Mecca Hajj.
Right. Mm-hmm. He made the Umrah, I think. Malcolm made the Honorable Elijah Muhammad made the Umrah, I guess. That's a understanding.
Yeah, that's when you don't do it in the proper season.
You don't do it in the, yeah. The Umrah is like, yeah, you go to Mecca, but you don't, Hajj is doing a specific, time specific, right.
Yeah.
Whereas
yes.
Umrah, you can go to Mecca at any time, right?
Any time, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we're running out of time, and I wanted you to, we wanted to take it back to, Malcolm Shabazz, I guess, any new developments on that, and anything
that's
else you would like to add.
I hope I can be in a position to give you updates. What I'm expecting, and I talked to one of my friends who colleagues out there, and he's doing a lot of investigation on his own, and he wants to co-author an article with me. And I told him to go ahead and pursue a couple of lines. First of all, to find out how the police, the law enforcement agencies are investigating the crime in Mexico. We need to look at a couple of Mexican media outlets to see how it's being reported down there, as well as to get on with the RUMEC organization, the last connection that Malcolm Chabazz had out there in Mexico City. Who are these people? Who are they? Reputable or progressive? We know nothing about that relationship. So we're going to look into that, as well as a couple of other stories that have broken out there, one in the New York Times and one at the Daily Beast by Ellison Samuels. We can go online and check that one out yourself. So we kind of pulling all that together, see if we can come up with something definitive in the next couple of days.
Because some people have, there is the whole conflict between the Africans and the Latinos and the and a lot of it. I grew up in Los Angeles, and I know a lot of it is manufactured by the system. And I saw something on, I think it was on the internet, which in the whole internet situation is, you have to be suspect of anything you read anywhere, but especially on the internet, they're putting, a whole conspiracy theory about it was, the drug thing as well. It's hit on, the African community. Have you heard anything about that?
Oh yeah, it's a little bit about that, and that kind of scuttlebutt can be anticipated, certainly.
Right.
But there's a book out there that deals with it by an ex student of mine, Lamont Muhammad. He's got a book on Black Mexico, and he's done a good job of historically putting that. Those two communities in historical perspective, showing that there's a long and ancient tradition between blacks and Mexicans going all the way back to, the 900 BCE. I mean, if you look at the works of Ivan Van Sertima, they came before Columbus, you get an idea of the long association, particularly with the Olmec civilization there in Veracruz and near the peninsula, where they have a long association, and certainly in Mexico City, as Dr. Palmer has done extensive work there to show that there's been a very vital connection and productive relationship between blacks and Mexicans.
Also, Jack Johnson lived there for many years, Langston Hughes, and
Langston.
It should never be for that had before Canada. Africans had gone to Mexico for sanctuary. There's many Marvin X, Jackman, who many people, including the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, Chairman O'Malley Shetela, knows personally. He lived in Mexico for a second, running from the draft. So.
From Detroit, who lived down in Oaxaca now for many, many years. I visited them when I traveled through Mexico many years ago, and they've been down there. It's Shell Russell and George Coleman. They both were part of the League of Revolutionary Black Workers in Detroit.
Right.
And they've lived for many years in Oaxaca.
Well, my aunt, who is 95 years old, still in the land of the living. I had her on the Uhuru Radio. She came to California in 1947. She talked about the relationship that Latinos and Africans had at that particular time, and it was non-antagonistic. Jane Cortez, who went to John C. Fremont High School, the same high school I went to, but she went there 10 years prior to me. She told me many times that the African community and the Mexicans united to fight against the white racists at that time, because Fremont was, integrating, and the Africans, including Don Cherry, the great trumpet player, they had to, unite with the Mexicans in order to, just for survival. And I know when I was coming up, we had contradictions, but they were not antagonistic contradictions, so.
I see.
Yeah. Always have contradictions within your own family,
Brother.
your biological family,
That happens. People have to struggle to resolve those things when they're just not the all what you call principle,
right,
you know, contradictions. The minor contradictions that exist, you know, between husband and wife, and they have to work it out.
Yes, sir. So is there anything else? We have about 1 minute.
Other than that, you know, I think that, you know, we push forward on this, and certainly our prayers are certainly with the family, and I'll be talking, I'm hoping to talk to Ilyasa tomorrow, and maybe next week we can have a somewhat of an update coming from the family. I don't know if Ilyasa is prepared to go on the air just yet, because I'm concerned about her whole mood and attitude. And helping promote the book, because the book comes out on Malcolm's birthday, May the 19th.
Well, Ilyasa came on. She came on my show in Toronto on CKLN, and was supposed to give me 15 minutes. We ended up talking about almost an hour. So I know if you can get her in the air.
Was she promoting her book at that point?
I think it was Malcolm X's birthday. And
she came on,
and some people I know from New York told her about me, and she liked my resume, and she came on, and we hit it off, because I had met her before she came to Toronto and had a book signing up here. We're going to have to let you go, my brother.
Oh, yeah, it was always a pleasure, so we'll see what we can do. The next few days, this thing develops, okay?
All right, thank you. We're going to play some music from Dennis Brown. Dennis Brown's Malcolm X, so I hope you're listening.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, Gerald Austin, it's always, I was ashamed to get a chance to get you on the air, but I always remember, you know, how...
Of Malcolm X, what men got vexed. They didn't want to see black men progress, and all along the way, black men have strayed, searching to find the way. Many prospect was to see, yeah. All men live in unity, but now he is down, whoa, down in the ground. Where can the killers be found? Brother, see, yeah, the hill.